nothing. Neanderthals just mean they were a different class of humans with a little bit thicker skulls. Number 8, fruit fly evolution. I would like to say no fruit flies were harmed in the making of this production, but in 7th grade we did horrible things to fruit flies. We mutated them many ways. We changed their eyes, their wings, their legs, their abdomen. And the favorite mutation is actually 2 mutations that go into 1 to make the 4-wing fruit fly. And you know what people say when they see the 4-wing fruit fly? That's evolution. Well, there's only one problem with that. The 4-wing fruit fly can't fly and it can't breed, so there's no way it could evolve into anything else. If you're writing it down, I want to give you what I call the PBS principle. In order for something to be evolutionarily significant, it has to pass all 3 of these tests. A mutation must be persistent. It must be passed down to the next generation. It must be beneficial, that is helpful, and it must be structural. And yet we don't see these. And for the children, this is what you need to ask your teachers about fruit flies. So if fruit fly mutations demonstrate evolution, what new genetic information has been added? Over 99% of mutations are harmful or neutral. Of the less than 1% of non-neutral or lethal mutations, no persistent beneficial structural mutations have ever been found. In fact, in 1995, the Nobel Prize was given to these 2 scientists for a technique called saturation mutagenesis, where they looked for every possible mutation in the fruit fly, and yet they didn't find one that was significant that could be released into the wild and change into anything other than a fruit fly. Also, while we're on this point, neo-Darwinists cannot account for the accumulation of 30,000 human genes that are different between apes and man. In fact, they can't even find one mutation, much less 30,000 genes. Even evolutionists admit mutations cannot account for evolution. Finally is vestigial organs. This is one of the favorites, and I was taught all the way through school. We have organs that we don't need anymore. They're vestigial. They are disappearing over time, and we don't need them, even though we needed them in the past in our evolutionary ancestors' history. The common suspects are the tonsils, the tailbone, or the coccyx, and the appendix. Well, what of these? This is what you need to ask your teacher if they talk about vestigial organs. So, if vestigial organs demonstrate macroevolution, what new genetic information has been added to the animal genome? For evolution to occur, you need something new, something good, something better. Vestigial organs only show that things are disappearing, if in fact they are vestigial. But they're not truly vestigial. Here's why the argument fails. It cannot be proven that an organ has absolutely no use. It's impossible. Even if organs could be proved to be disappearing, that wouldn't prove evolution. That would prove devolution, that things are getting losing function, losing information, not gaining. Physicians and Darwinists admit that no organ can be considered vestigial, and even evolutionists say that vestigial organs do not establish Darwinism. Now, I started school in 1980, and in 1981, I was in first grade, and I was taught vestigial organs throughout school, and yet, notice in this journal in 1981, Dr. S.R. Scadding says, vestigial organs provide no evidence for evolutionary theory. Then why is it still taught in schools? Because they have no better examples or illustrations. Well, what about the appendix? We don't need it, right? Well, notice all the way back in 1976, the appendix, it says, current evidence tends to involve it in the immunologic mechanism. It's part of the immune system. In a standard textbook in 1992, Dr. Keith Moore said the appendix is a well-developed lymphoid organ. What about the tonsils? They're not needed, right? Well, even just looking on Wikipedia, not even going to science journals, Wikipedia says the tonsils act as part of the immune system to help protect against infection. They're not vestigial. What about the coccyx, the tailbone? This young man is telling his teacher, "Sir, there are 9 muscles that attach to the tailbone. It is not vestigial. The coccyx or the tailbone is useful in reproduction and eliminating waste from the body, and really it holds the cradle of the pelvis so your organs just don't fall out from the muscles down there. Next, hair on human skin. Well, we don't need it, right? Well, no, the hair actually suppresses the sebaceous gland and helps release oil to moisturize the skin, and it keeps the sebaceous gland open to prevent sebaceous cysts. What about the wings of flightless birds? Birds like the emu, the rhea, and the ostrich. We're taught, oh, they don't need those wings. They're vestigial. Well, try to clip off the wings of an ostrich and see how well it does over time. The wings are useful in protecting chicks, in protecting organs in a fall, and in balance in running and balance in breeding. And if it can't breed, then it can't multiply. And here's one of the favorite ones, supposed hip bones in whales. They say that these animals, and this is to me one of the most laughable ones, they were in the ocean and they evolved out of the ocean into cows or cow-like creatures. Then they went back in the ocean and evolved back into whales. And here is what is left of their legs. Well, we know now that these bones are actually part of the reproductive system of the whales. It helps them reproduce. There's a book called Vestigial Organs Are Fully Functional, and it lists all the organs that used to be considered vestigial, and now they're all proven to have functions. And in conclusion, we'll quote from an evolutionist, Dr. H.S. Lipton.